of his own house. He hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. Or verse 4, if any widows have children or nephews, let them learn first to show piety at home and to requite their parents. To requite, there's a lovely old English word. Requite their parents. Or this is good and acceptable before God. So you see, the divine principle is that of care towards parents. That's part of Exodus chapter 20, verse 12, isn't it? The great commandment, thou shalt honour thy father and thy mother. It's part of the Ten Commandments to show that principle of care. Now, anything that breaks that principle, anything that destroys that responsibility of care, is in fact an evil principle. And of course the Jews, in their normal, ingenious way, found a way to do just that, is to have a law and then promptly break it. If you come to Mark chapter 7, we have, of course, perhaps the most famous example of Proverbs 28 and verse 24. Whoso robbeth his father or his mother and saith, it is no transgression. The Jews had found how to do that, you see. So remember these words in Mark 7 verse 10. It says, Moses said, honour thy father and thy mother, and whoso curseth father or mother, let him die the death. But ye say, if a man shall say to his father or mother, it is Corban, that is to say, a gift by whatsoever thou mightest be profited by me, he shall be free, and ye suffer him no more to do aught for his father or mother. Of course, you know what the Corban law was, don't you? If a man had land or flocks or herds or wealth or possession, which he really ought to be using to sustain his parents in old age. You see, in biblical times, you see, the superannuation fund of the Bible was your children, wasn't it? The fact that the next generation would care for the older ones in their community. That the family line of responsibility would mean that as the children grew up, that the parents could grow gracefully old, being cared for in the family house. The children were the safeguard for the old age of the parents. Now what this person in Mark chapter 7 did is this. He's got all his wealth and his possessions, and there was a law that said, ah, but if you're prepared to devote those to the temple, then you don't have to use them for the care or maintenance of others. Mind you, you've got the use of them in the meantime. So a person could say, well, my house, my fields, my flocks, my possessions are, they're Corban. Sorry, Dad. I can't help. But during his life, he was able to prosper from the use of those things. That was a device to get around the principle of the law. You know, in Mark chapter 7 and verse 12, where it says, ye suffer him no more to do aught for his father and mother, I've put, see Proverbs 28 verse 24. He that robbeth his father or mother and saith it is no transgression. There's the very fulfillment of that principle. So what is the principle? What is the lesson of the proverb? Well, I think the principle is that true gain never comes by depriving others who rightfully have a claim on your care. True gain does not accrue at the wrongful expense of another. That's not how it comes in life. We can't increase our own prestige, our own position, our own gain by robbing others to whom it rightfully belongs. That's not the way to true gain, says the proverb. And then coming back to Proverbs, the next proverb says in the 25th verse, He that is of a proud heart stirreth up strife, but the man who puts his trust in God comes to a different end, a different conclusion, inasmuch as he shall be made fat. Now, in verse 25 here, and for that matter in verse 26, I think we've got, if you like, if I can put it this way, a missing section on each side of the ledger. So if I can just use my hands here to demonstrate that, here's verse 25. So imagine that each side of the proverb has three sections, all right? Three sections. Now, on the side of the proud man, what we've got is the first two sections, but not the last section. So if I can put it this way, we've got the man of the proud heart, he stirs up strife, but we're not told what happens to him. We haven't got the third bit. You follow me there? On the other side, we've got the man who trusts in God. So we've got the same as the first bit. We've got the proud man on the one side, and the man who puts his trust in God on the other side. In the middle section, we know that the proud man stirs up strife. We're not told what this man does. And at the end, in the third section, we're not told what happens to the proud man, but we are told what happens to this man. We're told that he shall be made fat. So what we've got to do here is to supply the missing pieces so that the proverb actually is rounded out to its fullness. It's called supplying the ellipsis of thought. So really, I think the fullness of the proverb is this. He that is of a proud heart stirs up strife and does not prosper. But he whose heart trusts in Yahweh seeks peace and is made fat. Now we have more of a parallel of thought, don't we? You see how that by supplying the ellipsis of thought there, we actually complete the parallel idea of the proverb. So what we're being told about here is the person who stirs up strife. Now the proud man of this verse, a number of other translations, and I think rightly so, render it as, well, we've got any other translations for the proud man? Greedy. Yes, that's quite a common translation, isn't it? The greedy man. So you see, the greedy man stirs up disputes. Why does he do that? Well, he's wanting to do something for his own benefit here. He doesn't just stir up disputes and quarrels for no reason. He's grasping for gain. That's the spirit of these verses, isn't it? Now, do you know, in the New Testament, the word strife is invariably linked to another word. Does anyone know what the word is? Something and strife. Something and strife. Something. All the way through the New Testament. Sorry? No. Envy. Did someone say envy? Envy is right. Envy and strife. Envying and strife. What's envy? What is envy? It's more than admiring someone else, it's desiring what somebody else has. You see, this man of the verse is a greedy man. And the reason why he stirs up strife, the objective of the strife that he stirs up, is he has the ambition to obtain from another their wealth. Whatever that might be, he envies it. His strife is related to his lust for gain. Now what could that be? You see, this could happen even in ecclesial life, couldn't it? We don't really normally become quite so obvious that we want to actually take someone else's money. Not literally. But it could be someone else's success, couldn't it? It could be someone else's position. It could be someone else's popularity. There could be other things, you see, about that person that we envy, and so we cause strife that we might make gain out of them or from them, and we provoke quarrels for our own benefit, really. We're greedy of gain. So I think the principle of the verse is quite simple. True gain does not come from selfish contention or from bitter rivalry, but from gracious surrender to the divine hand upon us. That's the spirit of this man, or this woman, isn't it? True gain never comes from selfish contention or bitter rivalry, but from the person who's prepared to graciously surrender to the divine hand upon them. Whoso puts his trust in Yahweh shall be made fat. You see the paradox? You see, it's the greedy person who wants to be made fat. It's the other one who didn't do that that surprisingly ends up prospering. It's a paradox, you see, isn't it? The one who wanted it never got it. The one who wasn't worried about it gets it. So you see, this is all part of a lesson I think that we need to learn in life, is that the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God. We live in a society that says they know all about how to get gain. Proverbs says they don't know anything about it at all. not according to divine principles. The way divine principles work for the bringing of true gain in life are quite contrary to the principles and the thinking of the flesh. As the next verse goes on to show, because verse 26 says, "He that trusteth in his own heart is a fool, but whoso walketh wisely, he shall be delivered." Again, I think, by the way, in this particular verse, we've got, again, a missing piece on both sides of the ledger. Now, the bit that we've got missing on the one side, the negative side, is the bit at the end, the third section again, and the bit that we've got missing on the positive side is the first section. So let's put our proverb together here and supply the ellipsis. Verse 26, "He that trusts in his own heart as a fool would be counterbalanced by the person who trusts in God." Right? Even though it's not stated, the person who trusts in God. The next section is that this person is a fool, whereas this one is wise. They walk in wisdom. This one, it doesn't say what happens to them, but this one shall be delivered. So if this one is delivered, what do you think happens to this one? He's destroyed by implication, isn't he? So again, the fullness, therefore, is that he that trusts in his own heart is a fool who shall be destroyed, whereas the person who puts their trust in God is able to walk in wisdom, and they shall be delivered. So again, we've got a paradox, you see, to what the world would teach us. Because you see, what this proverb really says is this, here's the principle, that true gain, funnily enough, is not found by relying on personal skill or individual ability. Now that's not what the world teaches, is it? The world says, you can do it. You've got it. You can do it. You've got all the skills and the qualities you need. You rely upon yourself. This proverb says, that man's a fool. He'll be destroyed. You know why he'll be destroyed? Because, you see, life outside of the divine principles of the truth can only lead to the death, which is ultimate destruction, with no hope of the age to come. What true gain is there in that? Life outside of divine principles can only end in destruction. Only those who live by divine principles have the opportunity, the hope, of being delivered. And isn't that the true gain that we ought to be looking for in life? Of ultimate deliverance? Well, says the proverb, it doesn't come from personal skill or individual ability. Quite different, isn't it, to the teaching of the world? And I think that's a good lesson too, because, you know, our young people are all engaged in tertiary qualification, and we live in an age where it's necessary now. We realise that there are jobs and functions that may need tertiary education. I have no problem with that, as long as we always remember that divine principle is actually quite different to human wisdom. In fact, sometimes so totally different that they're exact opposites. Don't ever forget that. Now, here's another opposite. Here's an exact opposite. Verse 27. "He that giveth unto the poor shall not lack, but he that hideth his eyes shall have many a curse." Now you see, here is a classic illustration of where divine wisdom is the opposite of human shrewdness. How does the world teach us to obtain wealth? It says, well, you've got to accumulate. You've got to accumulate assets. And then you've got to do your best to jolly well hang on to them. Look out for number one. What's in it for me? These are the great watch cries of the society in which we live. What's in it for me? How God-centered. And the proverb says, you've actually got to develop the spirit of generosity. You've got to learn to think of others. You've got to show the principle of care if you want to gain. If you want to make gain for yourself, says the proverb, think about others. Pardon? Yes, that's right. Think about others, says the proverb, if you want to make gain for yourself. There's a paradox here based on divine principles. Do you know why these people never lack? I can think of at least four reasons why these people that give to the poor, that have learnt that spirit of care for others, why they never lack in life, compared to those who, when they see poverty or need, they shut their eyes so that they don't in fact have to give. Well, you see, I think the first reason why these people are better off is because they actually have a more positive outlook on life as a whole, even in times of trouble. The generous spirit had actually cope, you know, with trouble better than those who are ungrateful and who are only thinking of... When a person only thinks of themselves and they plunge into trouble, what happens to them? Their whole world comes to an end. It shatters. Woe is me. I am undone. Why me? Why this? Why now? Because it's all about me, you see. But the person who actually thinks about others, when they fall into trouble, they say, oh, well, count your blessings. They do. They have a more positive outlook on life, even in times of trouble, that enables them to cope. And the second reason why they're better off is if these people ever fall into difficult circumstances, guess who rallies around to help them? Why, those that they have helped when they gave to the poor. Those who have been touched by their kindness, who now love to respond when those people who have been generous to them suffer some difficulty in life. The third reason why I think these people are better off is because they have a better work ethic to recover from loss. You know, Christadelphians ought to be fantastic employees. Doesn't matter what our tertiary qualifications are. You know, I say to my children, I think I've said this before, that whatever your tertiary qualifications are, there are several other attitudes that are far, far more crucial to success in the truth and in life in general. And two of them are, be persistent and be passionate about what you do. Now you see, here there's another principle here, and that is the spirit of giving. Christadelphians ought to be able to rise in their employment to heights that other people don't rise to. Not because we're desiring that, by the way, or we're ambitious of that, but because we are the spirit. We have the spirit of those who've learnt to give. Can I help? Is there something I can do? Can I go the extra mile? Could I stay behind? Could I... We should be excellent employees, shouldn't we? Because of that spirit that thinks of others. And here's the fourth reason why these people, the people of this proverb, never lack. It's because of two other verses. Chapter 11, Proverbs 11, verse 24. Here's the same principle, you see. There is that scattereth, and yet increaseth. So I'll read that again. We went too fast then, didn't we? There is that appears to scatter, and yet somehow it's associated with increase. And there is that withholdeth more than is meet, and but it tendeth to poverty. See the principle? Those that learn to scatter, to give, to apportion, to disperse, funnily enough, find that in some secret, mysterious way they receive increase back. In the very process of giving out, it somehow seems to come back. Whereas those that withhold find that it only tends to poverty. Chapter 19 and verse 24. No, it's not chapter 19 and verse 24. It's chapter 19, verse 17. And you see, here's the other key. He that hath pity upon the poor... now here's the key. He that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto Yahweh. And that which he hath given will he pay him again. So God steps into the picture, you see, in a way that the world doesn't understand. You see, this is a secret that the world knows nothing about. And that is that those that learn the principle of giving find also the secret of the divine blessing in their lives, because God is the great giver. And in learning the secret of giving, we learn the secret of God manifestation. God gave his only begotten Son Giving is a principle of God. And those that learn to practice that principle find the secret of the fact that He will repay in our lives. The world doesn't understand that. Now come back to Proverbs, because we must finish, because our time is gone and I will be in trouble with the recording brethren shortly. So Proverbs 28 and verse 27 says, "He that giveth unto the poor shall not lack, but he that hideth his eyes shall have many a curse." Let's just summarize the principle. Here's the principle. It's a wonderful one. You ought to take a note of this one, because it's actually, well, I mean, they're all good, aren't they? But I think this is important. True gain comes not from learning to keep, but from learning to give. Now there's a paradox for life. True gain comes not from learning to keep, but from learning to give. That's the secret of the divine character, you see, intermixed into the principles of our own daily life. Verse 28, the matter comes to an end. When the wicked rise, men hide themselves, but when they perish, the righteous increase. And so the cycle finishes. You see how the story began? You see how the chapter began? When it starts with the wicked, and it ends in verse 28 with the righteous. But I think verse 28 is really an advance on verse 12, isn't it? It's really the cycle of verse 12 brought through to conclusion. Verse 12 says, "When righteous men do rejoice, there is great glory, but when the wicked rise, a man is hidden." And now verse 28 says, "When the wicked rise, men do hide themselves, but inevitably the cycle will come round again, and when they perish, the righteous shall increase." And so the lesson of the verse here is that of the final triumph of right principles, the final victory of integrity. And so the lesson, the story of this chapter is that whatever path you choose in life will develop an entire character. But only one path will bring true and lasting gain that reaches into the future itself. The one is a manifestation of the principles of the flesh, the other is a manifestation of divine principles that will bring us happiness not only in this present life, but give us, of course, the promise of life to come. How important that as wise kings we should choose the right path and the right way and the right principles to live by. In the words of Timothy, which says in one particular place, and how appropriate to the spirit of this chapter, he says, "Godliness with contentment is great gain," doesn't he? 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 6. So let us conclude then with the thoughts of the hymn that we shall sing in conclusion. Because here's the spirit of Proverbs 28. "Blessed are they that undefiled and straight are in thy way, who in the Lord's most holy law do walk and do not stray. Blessed are they who to observe his statutes are inclined, and who do seek the living God with their whole heart and mind. Such in his ways do walk, and they do no iniquity. Thou hast commanded us to keep thy precepts carefully. Oh, that thy statutes to observe thou wouldst my ways direct, then shall I not be shamed when I thy precepts all respect."